You are listening to a show on the Radio Nostalgia Network, which is also a member of the new Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That is BLUBRRY.com.
Yesterday USA Superstation.
The Radio Memories Network welcomes you to the programs of the Yesterday USA Superstation, now available as podcasts. Sit back, close your eyes, and remember.
Yesterday USA Superstation.
This is Bill Bragg, founder of Yesterday USA. For over 20 years now, we have presented public domain old-time radio shows free of charge and without commercials. We're available on the internet, on satellite, on selected AM and FM radio stations, on cable TV outlets, and in many hospitals and nursing homes throughout North America. You can even listen free on your home or cellular telephone. Visit the website yesterdayusa.com for more information. And now, close your eyes, relax, and remember.
Hey, Bill, don't forget their podcast on the Radio Nostalgia Network. That's a new addition to the Yesterday USA Network.
Hi, everybody, I'm Wong Hughes, and welcome to Thanks for the Memories. Here's Jack Armstrong from December 6th, 1940.
Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. This is the time of year when lots of you fellows and girls have to make a very important decision. What are you going to do? Will you keep right on eating Wheaties for breakfast during the winter months? Or do you think you'll have to change to some other kind of breakfast until spring comes again? Well, suppose you could ask your favorite champion athletes what they think about eating Wheaties in the wintertime. Pinky Higgins of the American League champion baseball team, the Detroit Tigers, says, Wheaties are swell. And that goes for the winter months as well as the summer. Or take that famous golfing star, Gene Sarazen. Gene tells you, my favorite breakfast is Wheaties with milk and my favorite fruit, bananas. There's the dish that hits the spot with me the whole year round. Why, say, I can go on and give you the names of champions in almost every line of sport who eat Wheaties right through the year. There's George Myers, the United Airlines pilot, and Adele Inge, the ice skating champion, and Tuffy Lehmans, the great halfback of the New York Giants football team. Yes, these are some of the champions who make Wheaties their number one favorite in spring and summer, as well as right now in the fall and winter. You see, here's one very important reason why Wheaties are a top-notch dish for your training diet this time of year. Those toasted Wheaties flakes with the champion flavor are jam-packed with heat energy units to help keep you warm when the weather gets chilly. In fact, you can eat Wheaties every single morning this winter without having to switch over even once to a hot cooked breakfast, because Wheaties give you the same number of these important heat energy units to help keep you warm as you'd get from an equal amount of hot whole wheat. So, if you're like these champion athletes who eat Wheaties all year round, if you'd rather have Wheaties for breakfast every morning, you can keep right on enjoying that good Wheaties flavor. You can take your nourishing athlete's breakfast of real whole wheat in the form of those crisp, golden brown flakes you like to eat. And when you pour milk or cream on your Wheaties and top that dish off with your favorite kind of fruit, you're having a genuine breakfast of champions. I'm asking you, could you want a better breakfast than that? You'd better get yourself some Wheaties. And now, Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Jack, Billy, Betty, and Uncle Jim, on the way to the country of the headhunters in the Philippines, are in a real predicament. High up in a narrow trail in the mountains of Luzon, their car is blocked by a landslide across the trail. And coming up the narrow mountain trail behind them is the unscrupulous adventurer, Dr. Chapatta, with Blackbeard and others. Chapatta was following Uncle Jim to steal an important chart and luminous ring, which Uncle Jim needs to locate some valuable lost uranium. But Jack, Billy, Betty, and Uncle Jim may have friends in need. They have just rescued a little Negrito savage from the landslide, and the rest of his tribe is watching from the mountainside above them, their bow and arrows ready for action. And now, Jack and the others are standing by their blocked car, watching Chapatta and his gang approach, and wondering how they're going to get the Negrito tribe to help them. Listen.
Uncle Jim, won't you let me destroy that chart now so Chapatta and Blackbeard can't get it? I know I've memorized it.
Not yet, Jack. A lot of things may happen before we get to the Sulu Sea. You may forget the location of the wreck ship by that time.
But, Uncle Jim, what are we going to do? Are we just going to wait here and let them overtake us?
We don't want to take to the mountains, Betty, and abandon our car.
Gosh, Wiz, I'll bet these Negritos would help us somehow if we could only tell them that we needed help.
I'll bet they would, too, Billy. Look at that little chap we just saved. He scurried up the mountainside. Look, there's a group of little Negritos around him. He's showing them where we dressed his cuts.
He's pointing out that bandage that Uncle Jim put on. Well, he's as proud as a peacock of that bandage.
That's all right, buddy, but that's not going to help us when Chapatta and Blackbeard and Lazaro and Michelle get here.
If we could only speak their dialect, we'd get more than their friendship. I bet they'd use their bows and arrows for us.
We wouldn't want to do that, Jack. Remember that those arrows probably have poisoned tips.
But Chapatta wouldn't mind using them against us if he had a chance.
You're right, Betty. But even so, I'd hate to have to fight them off that way. It's too uncivilized.
If only another landslide had come down just like that last one, right between us and Chapatta's car.
Oh, that'd be just too wonderful.
It'd be just too lucky, Betty. Though I shouldn't wonder if this whole road slid down the mountainside soon. It's wet as a sponge now.
Look, Uncle Jim, one of the Negritos is coming down toward us.
That's surprising. They're such shy little fellows that they seldom get close to a white man.
He looks a little taller than the rest of them. I bet you he's the chief of the tribe.
He's got his bow with him and a quiver full of arrows.
Well, they all have their bows and arrows with them, Betty.
But he's holding his bow in such a queer manner. Wonder what he's going to do with it.
I think I know what he's going to do with it, Betty. He's going to give it to us.
Give it to us?
I think he's going to give it to us as a token of friendship for what we did. See? He's holding it out to me as he comes.
That's just what he's going to do, Uncle Jim. I think we ought to give him something to seal the bargain, don't you?
We certainly should, Jack.
But what on earth can we do with a bow and a bunch of arrows?
Well, we can take them back to Hudson High, Betty. That'll make the fella sit up and take notice.
And Chapatta and Blackbeard and the others ever let us get back to Hudson.
Look, Jack, he's giving the bow and arrows to Uncle Jim. I've got just the thing to give him, Billy. Here, Uncle Jim, here's my special boat knife. Offer that to him.
That's a fine idea, Jack. I'll open the blade and give it to him.
Look, Billy, he's taking it. He's grinning. Why, he's as pleased as punch.
I'll say he is. Now, if we can only get the idea across to him that we need some help.
Uncle Jim is trying the sign language on him, Billy. He's pointing to Chapatta's car. Look at Uncle Jim frown and make a ferocious face. That ought to get the idea across.
Yeah, the Negrito's looking at the car, too, but he just doesn't understand.
Oh, I just know he thinks that Chapatta and the others are friends of ours.
Uncle Jim had better get his idea across quickly. Chapatta's almost here.
Uncle Jim, I have an idea. May I try it?
Go ahead, Jack. Anything to make him understand that we don't want Chapatta near us.
Come on, Billy. We're going to throw stones at Chapatta's car. That'll tell the Negrito chief what we think of Chapatta.
Oh, that's a swell idea, Jack. Betty, you be picking up all the loose stones you see. Hand them over to Jack and me.
Jack, I've always wanted to throw stones. Can I throw some, too?
The car's too far away for you to hit, Betty. Better let Billy and me do the throwing. Here's a good-sized one. Look up. Here goes the first pitch of the game.
Oh, not far enough, Jack. I'll try one.
Hey. You missed too, Billy. I'll get the range this time. Look out.
Oh, that was a perfect shot, Jack. Let's say you do that, Billy.
Oh, okay, Betty. Here goes. Honey, Billy, you broke their windshield.
Look, Jack. Look at the Negrito. He's beginning to understand.
Hold it, Jack. Don't throw any more for a while. I think our friend's getting the idea.
Jumping Jiminy, Jack. Look at the Negritos on the mountainside. They're getting the idea, too. They're all looking at Chapatta's car, and they're getting their bows and arrows ready.
Look, the Negrito is taking the bow and arrows from Uncle Jim. He's getting ready to shoot at Chapatta's car.
Uncle Jim is holding his arm and shaking his head. The Negrito understands. He's lowering his bow. But he's just itching to have a shot at the car.
Chapatta has stopped his car, Jack. He knows now that something is up.
I bet he knows it. If I saw a Negrito standing in the middle of the trail pointing a bow and arrow at me, I'd guess that something was up, too.
Look, Jack. Blackbeard's getting out of the car.
Why, he's coming here. Chapatta's sending him here to see what's up. Look up the mountainside, Jack. All of the Negritos are getting behind trees. They're not going to let Blackbeard see them.
Well, Jack, your idea worked like a charm. The Negritos know that Chapatta and the others are not our friends.
We'll have to be careful now that they don't puncture Blackbeard full of arrow holes.
Uncle Jimmy's aiming his bow and arrow at Blackbeard.
Hey there, no, nothing doing. We let that big man come and talk to us.
Gosh, oh, well, Mackenzie acts as if he understood Uncle Jim. He's lowering his bow.
But he's not slinging it over his shoulder, Billy. He's keeping it ready for instant action.
Oh, look at Blackbeard come. He looks scared to death. He doesn't know what the Negrito's going to do.
Ahoy there, Captain Fairfield. Got an old sea dog come up under a flag of truce?
All right, Blackbeard. We'll hear what you have to say.
Well, the chief sent me to you to make you see reason, Captain Fairfield. But blow me golly west if I can talk with that little black savage up fingering his bow and arrow.
You were lucky he didn't feather one into you, Blackbeard. Uncle Jim stopped him just in time.
I don't like his looks, Jim. A backstab I do.
He won't hurt you, Blackbeard, unless we give him the word.
Well, Captain Fairfield, I'm a-speaking to you man to man. Ram me on a reef if I ain't. Now, the chief says...
You mean Shapiro says, Blackbeard?
Well, have it your own way, Jack. But Dr. Shapiro is making you a fair and honorable proposal, Captain Fairfield. Now, he could take the ring and chart from you if he wanted to, not give you a thing. But seeing as I'm a friend of yours, he says he'll still go 50-50 with you. You give him the chart and the ring, and he'll sail the Black Shark to the Sulu Sea with you, get the lost uranium, and give you half of it. Now, how about it?
Tell Chapato I refuse his offer. I won't have any dealings with him.
Now, Captain Fairfield, I warn you.
Save your breath, Blackbeard. That uranium-235 holds the secret of atomic power. The nation that gets it can rule the world. Chapato wants to sell that uranium to whoever will pay the most for it. I'm going to get it for the scientists of the United States. And that's my final answer.
So that's your last word, is it, Captain Fairfield? Maybe you don't realize there's four of us in that car.
That's all right, Blackbeard. There are four of us here, not counting Betty.
Hey, you ain't counting you and Billy as a man apiece, are you, Jack? And as for that little dark savage and his toy bow and arrow, we'll make short work of him, split my course if we don't.
Better be careful how you talk about that little fellow, Blackbeard. His arrows are poisoned arrows.
Oh, what's that? You say he's got poisoned arrows there?
That's right, Blackbeard. And I'll bet he can split an apple on your head at 50 paces.
You can't threaten me, Jack Armstrong. I'm under a flag of truce. I got your Uncle Jim's word for it, and he's a man of his word.
That flag of truce only lasts until you get back to your car, Blackbeard.
That'll be long enough, Captain Fairfield. And when I get back to my car, you'll be sorry you were so stubborn. Roll McGunnell's under if you won't.
Just what'll you do when you get back to your car, Blackbeard?
You'll find out, Captain Fairfield. Maybe you didn't think much about it, but we're armed. Why, when we get through with this dark midget, he'll never point his bow and arrow at a white man again. And when we get through with you, Jack Armstrong, you'll know better than to smash up our windshield.
Wait a minute there, Blackbeard. I'm the one that made that bullseye, not Jack.
Then so much the worse for you, Billy. The chief was fair mad about that. Ripped my royals or he wasn't.
I get some of the credit for that, Blackbeard. I helped find the stones.
We won't forget that either, Betty. And now, Captain Fairfield, if you've nothing more to say, I'll get back to my car. And don't you forget, I'm under a flag of truce.
I won't forget, Blackbeard. But you'd better think twice when you get back. It'd be a shame to have a hail of arrows come whizzing into that open car of yours.
What do you mean, a hail of arrows? Why, this one little half-naked savage wouldn't get more than one arrow in the air before we'd fix him.
Perhaps he wouldn't, Blackbeard. But take a look, up on the side of the mountain.
All right, Captain Fairfield, I'm a-looking. What's up there that you're so proud of?
Billy, there's not a Negrito to be seen.
Oh, Jim and Jimmy,
where have they all gone to?
They're hiding behind the trees, Jack. I saw them all hide behind trees the instant Blackbeard came here.
Well, Captain Fairfield, I'm still a-looking up the side of the mountain. Maybe my eyesight is poor, but back my topsail if I see anything but trees and stones.
You may not see them, Blackbeard, but there's a whole tribe of Negritos there, and they're friends of ours.
And everyone has a bow and arrow, Blackbeard. The moment Uncle Jim gives the word, well, you can guess what had happened.
No, you can't bluff me. You got this one poor little savage with you, and that's all. How be you going now, Captain Fairfield?
All right, Blackbeard, go on. But when you get back to the car, you'd better tell Chapato what I said about that tribe of Negritos. Perhaps he'll have more sense than you have.
You don't think the chief is going to be bluffed, do you, Captain Fairfield? Why, I won't even waste my breath of telling him such a yarn.
Look at Blackbeard hurry back, Billy. He's still afraid he might find his hat knocked off with an arrow.
Look, Jack. Look up on the side of the mountain. The Negritos are coming out again from behind the trees.
And they're getting their bows and arrows ready for action. Oh, I wish Blackbeard had seen them.
He'll know they're there soon enough, Betty.
They're starting their motor. It looks as if they're coming.
Yes, and we've got to decide what to do quickly. If we can't restrain those Negritos, the air will be thick with arrows.
Well, stage is getting all set for one big surprise for Chipato and Blackbeard and the others. But say, will Uncle Jim be able to hold back that tribe of Negritos when Chipato starts trouble? If he can't, well, it's just going to be too bad for Chipato and Blackbeard and Lazaro. There's a specially thrilling time coming, and you can bet you won't want to miss it. So be on hand, all of you, at the same time next Monday for another exciting episode in the country of the headhunters with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Now, while you're thinking about it, be sure to ask Mother to get you some Wheaties this weekend. Boy, those Wheaties flakes will taste mighty good for breakfast tomorrow and Sunday. And you're all set to start the weekend in champion style if you'll ask for Wheaties now.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties? For wheat is the best.
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye till Monday for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
Food in the land. Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout.
Now here's the last part of the interview with Elizabeth McLeod, talking about Amos and Andy and her book. Again, I guess we'll talk about the research. I guess you sort of tipped your hand that you started at the high school term paper. Did you start looking at the scripts as a teenager? When did you start?
Well, I started mostly from magazine articles. I had always been a collector of old magazines, and whenever I found something on radio, I would put it aside. So I amassed quite a file of material at a very early age. I didn't get my hands on the scripts, though, until about 5 years ago. I had read excerpts before, but I actually got copies of the microfilms through the Library of Congress, and I made a serious effort to read them all the way through, which took a couple of years just to read. It was over 10,000 pages of material on those films, and I would read them between jobs, things that I was doing, and I'd take a few minutes every day, and I'd read some scripts, and I plugged along at it, and I got through, and that really gave me the foundation that I needed to finally finish what I'd started.
Did you just sort of take notes as you were reading along? That way you sort of knew what story they were at? And
exactly.
Ah.
And I'm still actually working on a project of preparing summaries for each episode. And that kind of bogged down while I was working on the book, but I hope eventually to finish it.
What about the contact with the family? I know Rich Carrell always seemed to have an interest in his dad's work. Did he ever contact them and get any input?
Oh, definitely. Rich provided some of the pictures in the book. Most of them came from my own collection, but there are a few that Rich provided. He's sort of the custodian of the Amos and Andy archives, big storage locker full of things that his father had saved. And I've spoken quite often with members of the Gosden family, Freeman Jr., Freeman Sr.'s oldest son, and Jane Gosden, who is Freeman's widow. And I've talked with them and gotten some input from them on different issues that came up during the writing of the book. And they're very enthusiastic about the book. They think it's a project that was long overdue, and I was very pleased to be able to have a part in doing it.
Do you have a favorite storyline or two that you can share with the audience?
Well, I think the storyline leading up to Amos's marriage is a very, very, very sweet, gentle sort of story. The preparation for the wedding takes a couple of months, basically, in the fall of 1935, and then the wedding itself takes place on Christmas night. But then after that, there are some difficulties that come up in Amos's business. Amos and Andy were running a grocery store at that point, during that era, and it fell into difficult money situations and was taken over by a receiver, and they had some difficulties with the receiver, and trouble ensued for several months after that. And finally, there was a solution reached by Amos's wife, Ruby, who managed to raise some money by borrowing some money from her father and from her aunt to pay off the debt that was owed. And she agreed to work that debt off by working for a doctor that she had worked for previously. And she raised the money that way. And it was sort of a gift of the Magi sort of thing. Ruby had to leave Amos for several months after that, but she managed to bail his business out. And it was a very, very heartwarming story, I thought. And then another one that I thought was very interesting was also in 1935, was a murder mystery in which a widow became obsessed with Amos and fell in unrequited love with him and accidentally committed suicide, believe it or not, which is a very odd sort of material for this sort of program, but Correll and Gosden got away with it, and Amos was accused of murdering her, and he became a detective and solved the mystery himself and proved his innocence. And that was a very dense period for the program, the mid-30s. They were doing a lot of very ambitious storylines, trying to test new waters and trying to explore new boundaries, and I think that they put together some very interesting material. Like very much to find recordings from that period.
Wow. Now, Elizabeth, how did you work out the concept for the book? Did you going to lay out all the storylines? Did you write like a bio of Freeman Gosden and Charles Correll first? How did you sort of lay out the book?
I thought that the best way to approach it was topically, lay out a topical outline. The first portion of the book is a sort of condensed biography of Correll and Gosden. It goes into their backgrounds, their family histories, and all that. And then once we arrive at the point of Amos and Andy, it sort of branches off into a topical analysis of the program. There's a chapter devoted to studying the characters. Each of the major characters is examined and explained and put into context. And then there's a chapter devoted to the storylines, exploring how they, not so much discussing specific storylines as exploring how Correll and Gosden managed to create plots and the sorts of plots that they focused on and how they elaborated on them. And then there's a chapter devoted to the use of language in the series. I ended up devoting quite a bit of time to studying the roots of the dialect that Correll and Gosden used. And I have some interesting observations in that chapter about the language that's used in the show. And then there's a chapter devoted to how the characters were portrayed in the context of how African-American characters were generally portrayed in the media of that time. That's an interesting chapter. So it's organized topically, and I think it moves along from subject to subject in a logical manner, and I think people will find the information easy to absorb.
Talk to Elizabeth McLeod about her new book, and you have any interesting stories about putting together the book? Did your computer ever break down? Did you lose information? There's got to be sort of a funny story. It might have been not too funny while it happened to you, but now looking back upon it.
Well, I think the most difficult part of the book was doing the index. Indexes are a very important part of any book. I look at this, one of the first things I look at when I pick up a nonfiction book, and McFarland asked for an index, and I thought about hiring someone to do it, but then I thought, well, who would know better the subjects to look up than me, since I wrote the book? So I had never made an index before and really didn't know how to do it, but I sat down at my kitchen table with a pot of tea, and I spent just a weekend doing nothing but indexing the book. I went through the manuscript page by page, and I very carefully put the index together, and any errors that you find in the index are the result of the tea running out. That was the most difficult part.
Oh.
That and rushing to meet deadlines.
Oh, yeah.
You're working on a book, the deadlines come up a lot faster than you realize.
and also I got to think proofreading it yourself. I mean, after you looked at the same page umpteen million times.
Exactly, and you do, I look at it now and I see typos that were missed by me and my editor, and it really aggravates me. And also, a lot of work went into the illustrations in this book. There's a lot of pictures of materials from my personal collection, Amos and Andy relics, script pages, souvenirs, things like that. And those were not in the best of condition, a lot of those materials. They're very fragile paper, messy, hard to read, things like that. I turned those over to my friend Amanda Osborne, who is a wizard when it comes to restoring fragile imagery. And she did an incredible job of restoring these things using computer technology. And she really put in the hours doing it. And if the book looks good, it's because of her work. I want to make sure she gets credit for it.
You bet. Anything else, Elizabeth? Any other thing you want to mention about the book?
Well, I think it's a book that isn't something you just want to skim. I think it's something that, you know, you should read slowly and think about. And take a special notice of the script excerpts. I've used a lot of material actually taken straight from the scripts, so that you don't get my opinion on what the script said. You actually get to read what was actually in the scripts, and I think that's a very important distinction to make. A lot of what's been written about Amos and Andy over the years has been written by people who haven't actually read the script.
You think you'll ever tackle another book down the road? Here's a special called Salute to Bing Crosby. January 9th, 1951.
Rate Your Mate with Joey Adams will not be heard tonight, so that we might bring you the following special program. Rate Your Mate will be back on the air here at its regular time next week. The Columbia Broadcasting System presents A Salute to Bing Crosby, transcribed from Hollywood and New York. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Art Linkletter welcoming you to the Columbia Broadcasting System's Salute to Bing Crosby. Assembled tonight to honor Bing and to join in his 20th anniversary celebration are many of Bing's good friends, including Amos and Andy, Louis Armstrong, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Ella Fitzgerald, Judy Garland, Bob Hope, Dorothy Kirsten, Mary Martin, William S. Paley, Jack Teagarden, Judd Conlon's Rhythm Heirs, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, and a very special surprise guest, and a little later in the program, we shall hear from Mr. Music himself. And now, here are Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Thank you so much. Say, Bergie, look at that big audience out there. Isn't it nice to know that there are so many people without television sets?
Dignity, Charlie, dignity. We want to make a good impression, so watch your step.
I will. You watch your lips.
It's all right. Charlie, tonight, a tribute is being paid to one of the greatest entertainers in show business.
Well, thank you. I shouldn't have gone to all this trouble for just little old wonderful me.
Well, it's not you. We're going to salute a man who is celebrating his 20th anniversary in show business, Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby? You mean old Lumpy Larynx? Yes.
And it's a great honor to be here. When I was asked to appear on this show, do you know what I said?
Yeah, how much?
No. Well, I said it would be a privilege to pay my respects to a truly fine person. For Bing is one performer who has never let success go to his head.
That's too bad, isn't it? After his hair moved back to make room for it, too.
Can't you say something nice about Bing?
Well, not after what he called me last time I saw him.
Oh, yes, I remember. That was right after he got back from entertaining in Berlin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Smart Alec, yeah.
Well, I called him Der Bingo, see, which was all right, because they called him that. I said, hi there, Der Bingo. And what does he do?
What does he do?
He calls me Der Shingle. Oh, I see. I despise the man.
All right, Charlie. I know you really don't mean that, because everyone loves and adores Bing Crosby.
Down, boy, down, down. You're getting mushy again.
No, no. Bing has done so much and so many nice things for people. He's always glad to give a boy a start.
Hey, he started four of them.
You know, his son Gary is making a big success of his singing career.
Yeah. Bing now has something you've always had.
What's that?
A boy to support him.
All right. Bing has done some wonderful things with his money.
Yeah, such as putting it in the bank.
No, no. Oh, such as the Crosby Foundation.
Oh, there is one?
Yes.
Come to think of it, he does seem a little slimmer these days.
Slimmer?
The foundation?
No, 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 no. Bing doesn't need a girdle.
He doesn't?
No. Those rainbow shirts, that's what fools you.
Yeah, well, don't kid yourself. At the end of that rainbow, there's a pop.
Yeah.
And 2-1, it's gold.
All right. Young man, you've made nothing but disparaging remarks. Now, it's Bing's 20th anniversary, so you should say something appropriate.
Okay, I will. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a non-financial pleasure to be here. And on Bing's 20th anniversary, I can definitely say one thing about him.
Yes?
The guy is a comer.
Yes, yes.
Let's go, Bergie.
No, no. Just 1 minute. I have somebody to introduce next here.
No, do it yourself. I'm scramming.
All right. It's Mary Martin.
Here I am back again, Bergie.
I thought you'd be interested in Mary Martin, the lovely star of South Pacific.
Yeah, and she ain't so bad around the North Atlantic either. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Mary Martin.
Thank you, Charlie and Edgar. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very happy to be on this salute to Bing. He's such a wonderful guy. I expect every one of my crowd to make fun of my proud protestations of faith and romance. And they'll say I'm naive as a babe to believe every fable I hear from a person in pain. Fearlessly I'll face them and argue their doubts away. Loudly I'll sing about flowers in spring. Flatly I'll stand on my little flat feet and say, love is a grand and a beautiful thing. I'm not ashamed to reveal the world of famous feeling I feel. I'm as corny as Candace in August. I'm as normal as blueberry pie. No more a smart little girl with no heart. I have found me a wonderful guy. I am in the conventional dither with the conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I speak of that wonderful guy. I'm as trite and as gay as a daily in May, a cliche coming true. I'm bromidic and bright as a moon, happy night pouring light on the dew. I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as the flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're to hear from the man who was the first to realize Bing's radio potential and the first person to star him on a coast-to-coast radio program. Here is William S. Paley, chairman of the board of the Columbia Broadcasting System.
20 years ago, aboard ship on my way to Europe, I heard a recording of an unknown singer. I was so impressed, I radioed his name to the head of our talent department. Of course, it was Bing Crosby. He was very good 20 years ago, and I know he will still be a great singer and a great personality 20 years from now. CBS is happy indeed to salute him.
One of Bing's top favorite singers is Miss Ella Fitzgerald. And here is Ella singing one of her hit tunes, Can Anyone Explain?
Can anyone explain the thrill of a kiss? No, no, no. But when two eager lips are pressed against yours, you'll know, yes, you'll know. Can anyone explain the glow of
ladies and gentlemen, here are two all-time radio favorites in a salute to Bing, Amos and Andy.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Amos.
And this is Andy.
We are very happy to be given this opportunity to say a few words about our good friend Bing.
We've known Bing for many years. We watched his career with a great deal of interest. Yes, we saw him go to the top, and we've seen him stay there. And this we expect to see for many years.
In this great era of entertainment, there are thousands of singers. And if we could look out and see all of these singers standing before us, there would be one face a little brighter, one voice a little lighter, and one head above the others. That's Bing. Bing, you've given a lot of joy to this generation. Good luck.
Right you are, Amos and Andy. That's the way we all feel about Bing. And now our next guest is the popular operatic star, Miss Dorothy Kirsten, who appears with Bing in his new picture, Mr. Music. Tonight, Miss Kirsten will sing Ouvre ton cœur, accompanied by John Scott Trotter and his orchestra. Dorothy. Folks, no salute to Bing would be complete without Louis Armstrong and Jack Teagarden. They both go back with Bing for many years. Louis and Jack, the microphone is yours.
Well, Jackson, what do you think Papa Bing would like to hear?
Well, he always liked the way we did Rockin' Chair.
Well, let's do that for Mr. Music.
Rockin' chair's got me blue.
Old rockin' chair got your problem.
Came by my side.
And who came by your side?
Fetch me a drink of water.
Now you know you don't want no water, Father.
Rockin' your high.
You gonna tend my hide.
Can't get from this cabin, oh cabin.
What cabin, choking father?
Ain't going nowhere.
You ain't going nowhere, man.
Just sitting here grabbing at the flies round my rocking chair.
Rocking chair, I remember Aunt Harriet.
How long in heaven she be?
About a year and a half, I think.
Send me a sweet chariot.
Oh, chariot.
For the end of the trouble I see.
My sweet chariot.
Oh, rocking chair's got me low, got me low.
rocking chair got your father.
And the jet, my dear, is driven up on me.
Tell him about it, boss.
To my old, old rocking chair. Oh, rocking chair, rocking chair.
That did it. But now here's another brilliant star who's been associated with Bing many times on the radio, Miss Judy Garland. And Judy sings Rock-a-bye Your Baby.
Rock-a-bye your baby with a Dixie melody. When you croon a tune from the heart of Dixie, just hang my cradle, mammy mine, right on that Mason-Dixon line, and swing it from Virginia to Tennessee with all the love there in you. Weep no more, my lady, sing that song again for me. And old Black Joe, just as all you had me on your knee, a million baby kisses I'll deliver the minute that you sing that Swanee River. Rock-a-bye, your rock-a-bye baby with a Dixie melody. Oh, weep no more, my lady.
Great. Thank you very much. And folks, now comes the time to present our surprise guest of the evening. We now hear from Bing's mother, Mrs. H.L. Crosby, Sr.
Harry has been whistling and singing ever since he was a little boy. I thought he was pretty good then, too. He has gone far since that time because he likes to sing, and I guess folks like to hear him. The world needs songs, and I'm very happy that my son can be one of those who supplies them.
Thank you, Mrs. Crosby. It's certainly a thrill hearing from you.
And you know, I'll bet Bing got a bigger kick than any of us.
I sure did, Art. Well, Art, this is really quite a surprise. I certainly never expected my mother to be on this show. But thanks, Mother. And thanks, Amos and Andy, and Louis Armstrong, Edgar Bergen, and Charlie McCarthy, Della Fitzgerald, Judy Garland, Dorothy Kirsten, Mary Martin, Bill Paley, the Rhythmaires, Jack Teagarden, and John Scott Trotter and the boys in the band for a really wonderful evening. I've worked with most of the people on this program tonight, and there are scores of others who have helped me much in show business. Paul Whiteman, Irving Berlin, Ethel Merman, the Andrews sisters, Mildred Bailey, Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, Al Winker, Harry Barris, Taps, Fred Astaire, Leo McCary, the Morris Plan. I mustn't overlook Bob Hope.
Well, I'm very glad you didn't, because I'd feel awful silly just standing here.
Difficult to handle now.
Bing, you know, I just dropped in to offer my congratulations and to borrow a cup of sugar. Yeah, I'm baking you an anniversary cake.
Well, that's very nice of you, Bob.
Well, of course, this is my first cake, so this may be your last anniversary.
Well, who cares? Who cares about a little indigestion? It's the thought that counts.
This 20th anniversary of yours kills me. Only 20 years in the business. How many decades did you chop off?
Decades.
Pardon?
Decades. That's decades, decades.
Not with you, it's decades.
Well, we didn't chop off nary a fortnight.
Nary, there's a gay 90s word if I ever heard one.
I wasn't around in the gay 90s in those days.
Well, I guess that's what made him gay. Bing, just when did you start your career?
Well, I don't remember the exact date.
Oh, never mind the year. Just name the showboat.
What do you mean a showboat? What?
Now, let's really give me that. Was it Captain Andy's Cotton Blossom?
No.
Price's Water Queen?
No.
French's New Sensation?
Pastime Pool.
Swallowing Markle's Floating Palace?
I just keep talking. You'll date yourself. Seriously, Bob, it really has been wonderful working with you, and I hope we travel many more roads together.
Well, that goes for me too, Bing. And now I think all the folks listening would like to hear one of the old songs that made you famous. You know, like Yankee Doodle or the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Well, if there was a piccolo in the band, I'd sing him too. I got another old one here that I think may suffice.
We played the game of stay away, but it costs more than I can pay. Without you, I can't make my way. I surrendered it. I may seem proud, I may act gay, that's just a pose. I'm not that way, 'cause deep down in my heart I say, I surrender. Those little mean things we were doing must have been part of the game. Lending a spice to the wooing. Ah, but I don't care who's to blame. When stars appear and shadows fall, then you'll hear my poor heart call to you, my love, my life, my all. I surrender. when stars appear and shadows fall, well then you'll hear my poor heart call to you, my love, my light, my all. I surrender,
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bing, it was a pleasure. And folks, be sure to tune in to Bing's program tomorrow night over CBS when Bob Hope and Bob Crosby join to help him celebrate Bing's Day. This is Art Linkletter saying goodnight. This program was produced and transcribed in Hollywood and New York by Bill Morrow and Myrtle McKenzie.
CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was a salute to Bing Crosby. January 9th, 1951. I'm Warren Hughes, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. And this is Yesterday, USA.
Yesterday, USA. Superstation.
Well, thank you, Walden Hughes, and thank you, Rudy Stark, before that, and welcome, everybody, to the tail end of tape number 7 for this, the two-week period that began on the 27th day of March. Boy, where is the time a-going? I guess when you have a good time, it slips away fast, doesn't it? And I want to say thank you to Walden for something else that he has done here at Yesterday USA. He has arranged for us to have a new DJ. That's right, we got a new kid on the block. His name is Robert Herman, and you'll find him right after Renfro Valley on our tape number 2. Now, Robert Herman is one of the founders of the fine organization up in Seattle, Washington, REPS. REPS stands for the Radio Enthusiast of Puget Sound. And Robert Herman is one of the founders of that fine club, and he's going to be here to entertain you for a one-hour period on tape number 2 from now on. And I'm so excited to involve the Radio Collector Clubs here with us on Yesterday USA. Why? Well, because they're some of the nicest people in the world. They're also some of the most knowledgeable people when it comes to old-time radio, and they have some of the largest and finest collections of old-time radio shows, and they have direct connections to some of the living members of the actors who were a part of the golden days of radio. So we are extremely lucky to have Robert Herman joining us on the REPS Radio Hour. You'll find it on tape number 2. Right after the Renfro Valley Sunday morning gathering. Robert kicks off his first show with the Lux Radio Theater, so get over there and check it out. I also want to say thank you to Michael King down in Florida, Tony Fournier over on tape number 12. Michael King, they send in $5 a month, that's $60 a year, $10 a month from Tony Fournier, that's $120 a year, Dick Staples, $60. The G-Woman from Wichita, Kansas, $60. Mabel from Cleburne, Texas, another $60, plus 3 CDs for the auction. George Gershwin music, Aretha Franklin music, and a CD-ROM of fine art. You know, it's not too early for you to send in something for us to auction off the last Sunday night of November. That's when we have the Yesterday USA auction. You can read about the auction and all of the different ways to help us out here at Yesterday USA by going to our website, www.yesterdayusa.com. So, Michael, Tony, Dick Staples, G-Woman, Mabel, you've done your share. God bless you, and thank you.
Brought to you in part step aside by Liberated Syndication.
Let somebody else
podcast
help us out.
Made easy.
We're dependent on you, folks. So whatever
that's
you do,
L-I-B-S-Y-N.
Don't you dare let us down.